Welcome to Power Hour, where the editors of Power Sports Business interview the movers and shakers of the power sports industry.
Okay, well, Sandy, we're here today with Sandy Scullion from BRP. He is the president of Power Sports and also Marine, I believe, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Yes, so the Marine, that just came in. You just kind of got promoted into that realm as well recently, so we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, we want to catch up here with Sandy on you know, mainly on the power sports side, but we do cover a little bit of the Marine, you know, especially with PWC and a little bit with the pontoons, anything that a power sports dealer would carry, you know. And we're seeing more power sports dealers going into Marine as well. Some of them are even buying marinas and kind of putting on two different shoes. So, but yeah, Sandy, welcome. We're happy to have you with PSB today. And where are you located today?
Located in Sherbrooke, Quebec, Canada.
Okay, and that's near Montreal?
Yeah, it's about an hour from Montreal, absolutely. Yeah. Not too far.
Far enough to stay away from the traffic.
Exactly, exactly the point. Yeah. But now, not north enough to be in the snow, though. But.
Oh, okay. So, right.
It's for these conditions.
Yeah. So, Sandy, we've got, you know, and we've got Madeline, our associate editor for PSB, is with us today. And I'm in Akron, Ohio. Madeline's in Arkansas. What part, Madeline?
Northwestern Arkansas.
Okay. So, yeah, we're all over the place, you know, thanks to the miracles of modern technology. We can all come together. But so, you know, Sandy, tell me a little bit about your background with BRP. I know you've been there, what, you're coming up on a big anniversary?
Absolutely. It's going to be 30 years in the spring for me. And the story about me is pretty simple. It's, you know, started as a DSM 30 years ago. And for me, just the idea of selling snowmobiles and having Magsies in my portfolio to sell to the dealers was like, you know, magic at that age. It's a, you know, never tell HR that, but I could have worked for free for the first year, right? And then it's and then it's been pretty much clockwork every 3 years, you know, moving in different roles and different part of the organization, touching obviously sales, marketing, a little bit of development, distribution, logistics, and so on. Up to at some point in 2007 in charge of the whole PA&A business. And that went for a while until 2014. And I'm skipping a lot of stuff, obviously, but I was in charge of the Western Europe and Middle East region.
Wow.
And then 2 years there, and then coming back in the more of a global retail and services role. In 2016, representing all of our brands except for Marine, obviously, and then became about a year and a half ago president of the Power Sports Group, including all manufacturing, whether it's in Mexico, in Canada, or in Finland, with about 15,000 employees. So that was about a year and a half ago. But this time now, a couple of weeks ago, José decided to obviously make some changes for obvious reasons, which we could get into, obviously. But now I'm in charge of the Marine business as well. So, but manufacturing as a whole is now directly under the CEO. So super happy with the challenge, by the way.
Okay. So the manufacturing part is under José, and he's José, I should say José, the proper French Canadian.
It's the French version of José, exactly.
Yes. You know, and I will tell you a little story because I, you know, like I was telling you earlier, I spent a little bit of time in Canada where half of my garage, I worked on a racing school, half of the garage was French Canadian, and they had, you know, they wanted us to make sure we pronounced their names in French Canadian, not, you know, we couldn't call somebody Claude or Martin. It's Claude, Martin, you know, so I got used to that, you know, and and learned a lot of interesting insights on the French Canadian eating habits. You know, a lot of poutine.
Oh my God.
But but with Jose, I'm going to get this right at some point, kind of handling that. What do you oversee? Are you working closely with dealers? Are you working with the, okay.
So it's basically services are, like I said before, manufacturing is now a service to the division. R&D is a service to the division. And the chief marketing officer is a service to the division. But being in charge of power sports and marine, I have full P&L responsibilities, but obviously being served by my colleagues in certain areas where we need the expertise and we need the focus. And my direct oversight is actually everything that touches retail and services, meaning from parts, accessories, and apparel, from the product planning side to the distribution, to the sales side, to the sales programs, obviously network strategy, the support of the network, all the call centers, the salespeople, and so on and so forth. So everything that touches the channels, so whether it's a dealer, distributor, or even B2C for the P&A business, that's under my direct oversight.
Okay, it's not a small amount of responsibility for sure. You know, you're like the quarterback. You know, and again, you guys have had some, you know, these recent years have been pretty good, pretty, you know, even with the pandemic and everything, and everyone dealing with supply chain issues. You know, you were not alone. Everybody had to deal with it. You know, and maybe you guys came out a little bit ahead of a lot of people because you had more stuff consolidated. Your manufacturing was more consolidated, so you didn't have as many supply chain problems as some of the others. And that allowed you to grow even more, right? Would you say that's pretty accurate?
Well, we made it look like we had less of issues with the supply chain, but it's the same for everyone, right? For us, when we saw this thing going on in the middle of the COVID, where it really was difficult to get all the parts to the plants and being able to produce and get these units to our dealers, and we had a couple choices back then. And it's either you stop producing because you don't have all the parts. It's either you produce incomplete units and you stack them in the yard, but at some point the yard is just so big, or you ship them to dealers incomplete. And in the back of our minds, we also had this opportunity we saw of getting the whole shot. In our business, this is really important. Obviously, we deal with Asian competitors. We deal with American competitors. And obviously, we're Canadian. We've got manufacturing plants and pretty much everywhere in the world. But the majority of our production is from Mexico. We don't have any labor issues like most of our competitors. So we saw this big opportunity to get that whole shot and be in market faster than anyone. So we decided to introduce this concept of incomplete units being shipped to the dealers, right? Still owned by BRP, but shipped to the dealers. And as these parts were coming in from our suppliers, instead of restarting the line, rebuilding these units, and then the transfer from our plants to the dealers, we just shipped air all these parts to the dealers so that they were able to assemble these units and retail these units. And I believe this was one of the big moments made us gain so much market share in the last, in the last year and a half. So we were pretty happy with that strategy.
I mean, I think that was a brilliant move, really. And you obviously have very competent dealers to be able to trust them enough to be like, hey, we're going to, you know, entrust you with quality control to be able to put the, you know, to finish these off. But, you know, they've obviously got a lot of experience doing that, too.
Yeah, but you got to realize that we limited the complexity of these components, right? We limited sure. to times clusters or, you know, ECUs, or it's mostly plug and play. We would never have done that with a safety related component, like a suspension component. We were super prudent doing this. But hats off to the dealers, and because we put a lot of burden on these folks, and it's a teamwork. Obviously, we got there because of our dealers, and obviously our desire to always win. That's a little bit part of our culture.
Oh, speaking of dealers, I'll let you know Madeline's family is also a BRP dealer, a big BRP dealer in Arkansas. So I'll let Madeline ask a couple of questions, but you know, she's kind of grown up with BRP. So
yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah, so I was just gonna ask, we talked about COVID. So what are some headwinds or challenges that you're kind of foreseeing in 2024? What are you guys keeping your eye on?
I mean, this we're obviously at this crossroad of over-demand going to oversupply, right? And this is coming from all of the OEMs.
Yeah.
We obviously got the whole shot, so we got a little bit of an advance, but now all the OEMs are shipping to the dealers. And so we see this pressure, we call it the crate pressure, right? These units coming in the network. And actually, lately, when we combine this with the context of, you know, the economy is a little bit more softer than what we've planned, and traffic is less as well. The interest rates are high. And, you know, part of our dealer value proposition is actually dealer profitability, right? If nobody's profitable and we keep selling units, nobody wins, right? We need to be profitable doing our business. So we took that decision a month and a half ago, when we saw these indicators, right, not pointing out all the right directions. Although we have good momentum in certain categories, we wanted to a little bit slow down, at least for the next quarter or two, and maybe readjust the inventory levels to a more reasonable level, both for the dealers and for BRP as well. And the idea is, it's not much different from this whole shot I was telling you about. It's the idea is to get to the next fall as clean as possible, so we can focus on model year 25 and get that whole shot once again. That's the bigger picture, right? Obviously, in the transition, we want to make sure that we support the dealers. We are investing significantly in the engagement funnel, getting that traffic going, and having quality traffic walk into the showrooms as well.
Yeah. You know?
But when you have, you know, 8 product lines, you'll be wrong in terms of planning on a couple of them. This is, I would say, normal course correction for us. We adapt to the context. We're a little bit more careful these days because we understand the pressure that the dealers are living right now. But this is not a short-term strategy. This is, we're going for the long term, right? So we need to keep the family happy.
For sure.
Right.
So another question then, looking forward, electric for BRP. Me and Brendan were kind of talking about, you know, do you guys see this as something that you need to kind of chip away at slowly, or just go full in and tackle it? What's the mindset there?
It depends. And I'll tell you, first off, we are committed by 2035 to have 50% of our production EV, right? That doesn't mean that 50% of today's products are going to be EV, but in the overall portfolio of BRP in 2035, that's the possibility, that's the opportunity. So that being said, in the existing products, you know, as well as I do, not every power sports product can be easily electrified for, you know, physical reasons. Whether it's a farmer, you know, working around his farm is one thing, but when you're going 100 or 200 miles out there in the woods,
range, yeah.
Range is going to be an issue. And when you're talking about, a deep snow snowmobile, well, in the mountains, your first enemy is weight, and the power density that you need on the summit, as an example, and the power to weight ratios you need to respect to be, you know, to have a performing unit is not going to be possible with today's electric technologies. It's just physically not possible, right? We might see breakthroughs in 5 years from now and 10 years from now, but for now, there is a place to electrify power sports. There are certain categories that will be easily electrifiable, and it's going to be an evolution. It's not like all in and tomorrow morning, all ATVs are side by side. They're going to be electric. That's not going to happen, right? But we did commit so that every category that we have is eventually going to be electrified. We'll understand what that customer wants. We'll probably attract new customers to our business as well. People that won't buy units today that are internal combustion, that but would do buy electric. So it's but where we're all in is in the technology itself. BRP decided to go all in kind of a vertical integration of these technologies, from the charger, the inverter, the battery, the motor. This is not buying an off-the-shelf.
You're not just giving them the electric without all the other support behind it.
Because we understand at the end of the day, what will make a difference with our products is the perfect integration of these components that do not compromise the vehicle dynamics or the vehicle benefits we want it to have. When you design yourself, you can have a much more modular approach, but then you can choose the right components, the right sizing, the right HP, the right everything, so that at the end of the day, we have the perfect product out there. So we believe that we will be the leaders in electrification of power sports. There's no doubt in our mind.
I think you guys were one of the first to really announce that you were going to do this, kind of big change over at, well, I wouldn't say a big change, but a big commitment to it. You know, a lot of others were kind of like, I don't know. They're still kind of dabbling with it, you know? And I think you guys have taken that bold step to say, hey, no, we're committed to doing this, but we're not getting rid of all the gas stuff. You know, it's like, hey, we're still, and I think you're absolutely right on certain applications, it makes sense, you know?
And we started obviously you've seen the snowmobile, the electric snowmobile that we started shipping to our partners. And just the fact that we started with a snowmobile, you kind of understand the internal challenge. This is the worst product.
But you guys are the snowmobile experts. You're the fathers of the snowmobile.
But the minus 20s and being on the snow.
The temperature is a bad. That's a
tough. So imagine for us, it was more of a, it's not going to be a humongous business. That's not the idea, is to be able to really make our components, our power packs robust to whatever you throw at it. And the snowmobile,
I think it's a great R&D vehicle for you, because if you can make electric work in snow with all those kind of challenges of the cold and the inefficiencies of the track and the weight and everything, I mean, you'll hit a home run.
Then the rest becomes easier if you
Okay. So the Can-Am bikes, the electric Can-Am bikes, are those still, is that still a plan going forward? I don't know if they're where it is, and I know it was kind of released and teased, but I don't think they're not out in production yet, right?
We did a couple of soft launches with it. August is going to be the big show, where we're gonna unveil all the details about the Can-Am two-wheel, and production is going to be at the end of this year, so at the end of 24.
Okay.
We'll start shipping dealers, and
does that be at Club BRP is where you're gonna announce
absolutely in August.
Okay. Well, we'll have to be, where are you guys going to have that this year? Do you have it figured out?
No, we're going to unveil this at Club Ski-Doo on the 20th, Feb 20th.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll have, we might have our snow goer, because we have, you know, of course, we're big on the snow market with our snow goer publication. So we're always, but, and recently you guys had your founder was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame, which is very cool. And I will tell you the local connection there, Inventors Hall of Fame used to be right here in Akron for many years. And they moved to actually the headquarters right down like a little bit south of here, but their museum is now in like Virginia or something. So unfortunately, I can't go look at the museum, you know, piece in there. I'm sure you guys have something in the museum, but I thought that was really cool. And, you know, it's amazing to see how, you know, you came from those snowmobile background to then being such a powerhouse in power sports altogether, you know, with off-road is a big segment for you. And then you got your three wheelers. How, you know, I think a lot of people look at what you guys is like the leaders in snow, but you still have some market share. And I think you're gaining market share in some of these other sectors, especially off-road. Are you going to keep your foot on the gas and off-road and all that?
Are you questioning this or?
Not really, but yeah, I mean, I've seen some of the stuff you guys roll out of, but it's been some, you know, the new Maverick and it's amazing. Oh, yeah.
It's, I mean, when you think about it, in two, what was it, 7 years ago in Texas, we had 3% market share, right? And today we're the number one market share in Texas. It's like, wow. This is the biggest state of the U.S. for off-roading. Yep. The momentum is actually phenomenal. And this is the category we are investing the most, both in product and obviously in the consumer engagement funnels. And we are a clear contender to be the number one position in the world for ORV. And yeah. Mark my words, though, it's a question of time. And I'll be glad to come back with another podcast to celebrate this when that
comes. Yeah, no, when you do, we'll definitely have you back on. And, you know, and I will say some of our recent dealer surveys, we always ask if you only had one OEM partner as a dealer, who would you choose? And you guys are in that top three category. So, you know, which I think is a pretty good testament to what you guys do and how you treat your dealers, how you work with your dealers. You know, I think most people we talk to have a lot of, you know, respect and good things because you do treat the dealers well. You know, you're not like trying to shove product down their neck and have them deal with the flooring and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. But now another quick question, though, is maybe it's not so quick, but, you know, with Kawasaki, all these guys are going premium utility, you know, the Ridge and the Ranger XD and even kind of that Expedition vehicle. You know, are you guys looking at that going, did we, you know, are we going to, I'm sure you have something cooking, but is that an area that you look at like premium is? And I would say your Maverick, the X3 is a premium sport product. But do you look at premium in other categories as going like that's where the market is right now?
Well, it is certainly it has protected us in this little bit of a slowdown because our brands are premium. Our packages are probably more premium than anything else out there. And the first, I would say, tranche of customers that have been affected by somewhat of a slowdown are not the premium, but more of the entry level. So the value brands are struggling a bit more and they want to play in the premium because they see this very clearly, right? But when you look at the side-by-side, as an example, when we launched, you know, the Lone Star Edition, or the limited edition, full cab, HVAC, and so on, increased capacity on this. I mean, this is, in these specific categories, we are the leaders. And I believe the rest of the OEMs are actually responding to this. Now, mind you, with bigger platforms, and we're looking at this, side-by-sides now are getting in, you know, range of the, you know, the 35, the 40, the 40,000 US range.
50, 60 even in some of these, yeah. Which I'm like.
Exactly. So the question for us is, where's that limit, right? And at some point, it's one thing as a premium brand to be in that area, but I believe it may be another discussion for a value brand to be in that area. So, I mean, the future will obviously tell us, but don't worry, we got our eyes on everything going on in the industry.
Right.
And if we ever are a little bit behind for a quarter or two or a year on a product, you can expect us to be there.
To respond. Yeah.
Absolutely. But again, lineup we have in our hands, the latest launch of the Maverick R, the technology in that unit, that's an engineering marvel with a DCT on there and 240 horsepower on 1 liter. I don't know if you realize that, but there's no production car that has that power per liter production. It's just
power to weight ratio or the horsepower per liter. That's a big accomplishment, really. Now, is that turbocharged too? I believe that is turbo, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah, power.
Yeah, like, you can't get that power out of naturally aspirated, No. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing where things are going, you know, on some of that stuff. And it seems like the horsepower wars are still, you know, ongoing. Everyone always wants more power. But now I'm also seeing this luxury, you know, these car-like vehicles. And I do think you guys have very, the fit and finish quality level is second to none. You know, everything I've ever ridden from you guys has been good. And I've done everything. I used to race your Rotax engine and go-karts, you know, so you guys kind of cover all kinds of things. But
you still race? I actually have two DD2s, actually.
Do you? I would love the DD2. Actually, I my brother and I were the first in our area to go with Rotax with touch and go. You know, at the time, everyone was all Yamaha, KT, you know, pipe class or whatever. And nobody knew where to put us in the class. We were the only two there with the, and they said, oh, we'll put you in with the 100cc guys. We blew them away so bad, they had to put us with shifter carts.
Not even funny.
We would, and shifter carts, we could finish mid-pack and from a standing start. We'd have done better if we did a rolling start, you know. So, yeah, it was amazing. And the next year we came back, there were tons of Rotaxes. Everyone was getting into them, you know. So, and the DD2, though, I love that machine. I think I haven't raced in a few years. I do have a cart still that is older. It's, you know, like 10 years old now. So I'm due for an update soon. I might need that DD2.
Give me a call.
All right. Yeah. It keeps you in shape, you know, and I like the shifting part of it. Not quite a shifter cart, but close enough. You know, I'm too old for a shifter cart. You know, it's too much. Yeah.
It's a lot to handle for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, yeah. Well, Sandy, I want to thank you so much for being on with us today. I know we could keep talking for probably an hour or so, you know, but I want to keep it short. We'll have to have you back on for sure. We really appreciate your time. And we're really looking forward to seeing, you know, all the things you're coming out with in the next year or two. And keep your foot on the gas for sure. And I know you will.
Stay tuned. All right.
All right.
Thank you, Brandon.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you, guys.
If you like this podcast, please like, share, and subscribe. We also invite you to connect with us on powersportsbusiness.com.